You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
This episode of On Brand is brought to you by my new book, Brand Now, How to Stand Out in a Crowded, Distracted World. Many former On Brand guests are already raving about Brand Now. Jay Baer calls it the quintessential guide to modern branding. Stacey Grissom of BarkBox says Brand Now provides practical tools and a helpful framework for building a brand both online and off. Learn more, get special extras and additional resources at brandnowbook.com.
Welcome to On Brand, a podcast for brand builders by brand builders. Here's your host, Nick Westergaard of Brand Driven Digital.
Hey, brand builders, and we got a show for you. This week's guest is Luke Beatty. Prior to joining Brandfolder as CEO, Luke served as president of media brands at Verizon and as managing director at Techstars in Boulder. In 2004, Luke founded Associated Content, which was sold to Yahoo in 2010. He holds a master's from Harvard University and an undergraduate degree from Connecticut College. Along with riding a bicycle every day, Luke is a youth lacrosse coach and fly fishes around the world. Luke, welcome to On Brand.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Appreciate it. I read something like that, and I have to ask, have you already ridden the bike today, or does that come later?
No, I rode to work this morning. So my guarantee on that is that I have to get to work every day and home. So I can always count on at least getting on the bike twice a day, and then I try to do longer, more elaborate rides on the weekends when I get a chance. So, yeah,
a smart claim to make in that it's your mode of transportation to and from work. So you can't beat that. So talk a bit about, I mean, I guess first, kind of what is it that Brandfolder does?
Brandfolder is a platform that brands use to really manage the day-to-day logistics of their brand and their brand assets on one side, and then the other side use that platform to have some data analytics and insights around their brand that they've probably never thought about before. The idea behind the company, which is no different today than it was when we started it about 5 years ago, was to really to see if we could make an effort to keep brand from being so esoteric and so not fact-based, and to keep brand's integrity and creativity, but also put it into a platform environment where you can learn more about your brand and distribute it in really thoughtful academic ways, as opposed to leaving it out there for a lot of misunderstanding, wrong consumption, etc.
Right, because as you said that about keeping brands from being esoteric, or I sometimes say squishy, because it's kind of hard to get your arms around. It's a big idea, and I would imagine a welcome idea, a novel idea, but that's got to be challenging, because by and large, don't brands kind of suffer from being esoteric? How do you draw lines and make that a more concrete thing for folks?
Well, the first thing we do is, like I said, on the logistics side, is in order to distribute your brand however you need to do it, there is a lot of complex workflows that happen. And what we try to do is simplify those down so that the way of collecting and distributing your brand to the consumer is done in a really simple easy way so that a brand can really get all of its brand assets and all of its materials. And when I say that, I mean everything from, you know, podcasts like this to logos, fonts, colors, ad creative, sales enablement, you name it, all of the creative assets, getting those into a platform so that they can be shared really easily and really efficiently. And I think taking a lot of the, games of telephone, of passing assets around and hoping they're used right and all of that sort of out of the process.
Well, and I would have to think that that fills a pretty big need. Both, I mean, it's easy to think of places where we have to share these assets externally, but I would think internally, especially at larger organizations as well, you want people to be a part of sharing the brand, but more often than not, nobody knows exactly how to do that.
Right. Yeah. And so for that, you know, the way we work is I'll use iTunes as an example. We encourage brands to really, like I said before, you know, upload all of their creative into a brand folder, and then from there they create what you would call like a playlist, right? There's really only one asset, or in the iTunes example, there's only one song, but that song rests and sits in many different playlists. And those playlists are, like you said, internal groups. So you might have, 10,000 brand assets for your company, and there may be 100 assets in a an internal product team for the assets that they need, and that's a collection. And then a collection of things for your PR team, and then a collection for your sales team, and all these different groups internally, and then a whole other set of collections for people externally. Your collections of assets that you need for, say, email marketing or social media or branded content or so on and so forth. So we operate in a world of collections or playlists, if you use the iTunes analogy. And a lot of those are internal and a lot of those are external. And I think, you know, at different companies, there are more collections that are internal, and at other companies, there's more collections that are external for others.
Well, and I, you know, as you talk through that, everything being in one place, with the great big caveat that, you know, less people pounce on me. Yes, your brand is more than your logo, but say something as easy to grasp as one's logo that can change that, you know, oh, all of a sudden we you know, it's a registered trademark and we want to make sure that's on there. You're sure. Changing it in one place, so you don't have, okay, the everybody's got all these different variations of the logo on their machines and everything else.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right, and we see more and more of that. I'm doing a presentation next week at a conference, really about that exact topic of dynamic brand. We're starting to see that a lot. I think, you know, 20 years ago, identities or logos were pretty fixed and they didn't change much. And today they're highly dynamic and operate in that world, which is exciting and really engaging for consumers to have dynamic brands that, you know, like IHOP switching to IHOB or pro football teams or any sports team switching identities and logos and colors for a night and then switching back the next day. That's not, you really can't do that over email and by having access to a Dropbox or Google Drive or something like that, because you can't be that agile. So that's one of the real trends that we see, and also a big driver for our business is it's hard enough if you just had very fixed brand identity and assets and all of that, but they change all the time. And, you know, you're going to add new podcasts every week, and you probably can't email those out to everybody all the time. So how do you create a system whereby you can, with a simple click, change it one place and have it change everywhere, sort of like a CDN?
Absolutely. So in looking at that idea of dynamic brands, that's something that's very interesting to me. I actually just wrote a book about today's brand dynamics.
Yep.
And why... Why do you think that is something that you're seeing so, I mean, beyond the executional prowess that it takes, it does seem like this fluidity of brand, you know, where it used to be this kind of concrete, rigid thing that we didn't change, that, you know, everybody accuses everybody else of being the brand police. But now you see it flexible. You see it moving more than it did before. Why do you think that is?
You know, I kind of talk about it into three categories, although there's probably a lot more. I think the three categories that we see for that drive dynamic brand, and none more important than another. So these are not in any sort of order. But mm-hmm. one is alignment. Brands like to define their own adjacents, it seems, and they want to put themselves in company that make them that reveal more about their personality and their emotion, and they want to drive sentiment. You talk a little bit about that in your book for sure, and they want to drive the meaning behind the brand. And a great way to do that is to align yourself with other brands. So you'll see it may be turning your logo pink or pink for breast cancer awareness, or red for AIDS awareness, or any other thing that you might see that where companies will really shift their identity for usually a short period of time to really show alignment and show kind of where that brand stands and how they hope people will see it and connect it to a brand that everybody already has an opinion with and kind of put themselves into that group. So I think alignment is one. The second we see is the launch of new products. It's hard to get awareness for brands to have new products and get that out the door and get it recognized. The IHOP, changing to IHOB, is an example of that. That's a branded way of really launching itself into a new world, which is to say that, you know, now you can get hamburgers and cheeseburgers at IHOP. And they thought of a creative way by way of their brand. And they know their brand is already a sign that you can see either online or in brick and mortar and see that every day. And so they say, wait, we already have this identity out there. Let's tweak this identity and use that as a vehicle to launch new products or reposition or something like that. So that's the second one. And a third one that we see is really more of a revenue focused thing. I think people, especially brands who license their brand, to then license to create new instances of that for them generates more revenue. I think pro sports teams is another, like I said before, I'll use that example again. They sell more gear when they go to their throwback uniforms or switch to an older logo. And that allows them to not, you know, to build their brand while generating more revenue and creating buzz and that kind of stuff. So I think those are the three kind of buckets that we see them generally fitting into.
Well, I love the example of the throwback uniforms and how that fits into the overall categories. Now the IHOB thing, it helped me because I've followed the story. Is it a true shift in identity, or is it a play that is somewhere in between there? That again, I'm unclear if they're actually changing their name. I guess I'll admit my own ignorance there. Or is it a campaign to seem as much with the objective of launching a more broad menu, a product line, really?
Yeah, I think both of those things. And I also think the fact that the mystery behind it that you're suggesting is part of the whole thing. And I think that's where you see these things happen. Is that for a long time? Is that for a short time? Are they really keeping that? Is that going to really show up on the signs on the street or just on the website and in the newspaper? And I think that's exactly what's going on. And I'm going to go ahead and take a risk without having any data or facts, but I'm going to say that not a lot of people were talking about IHOP a year ago. and that the index of awareness has gone up tremendously because of that. And I do think it is practical in the sense that they're trying to make it clear that they're not just selling pancakes anymore. They're also selling burgers. But how that's going to reveal itself is, my understanding is that it is a temporary, stunty kind of experience, but there's also sort of, you know, there's an intrigue around that for whatever reason, especially with brands that people have seen a million times and passively digest the emotion and sentiment around those, even as they drive by them every day without thinking about them. So, I think you nailed it, right? Which is, now I'm thinking about a brand that I was never really thinking about before, and I'm thinking about it creatively, and there's even some sort of mystery involved.
Yeah, well, it's one of those moments where I realized as I was thinking through, talking through it with you, you kind of deconstruct your own thinking and like, and what happened. And yeah, I mean, to your point of it's hard to launch products, especially in parody spaces like food and things like that. But yes, that's information I have now, that they have burgers that entered my my awareness, my mind in a very non-traditional way, but that's information that I have now. So I think at a very challenging time to do that, that was kind of a pretty interesting strategy.
Yeah, and the brand... the brand presentation, whether it's again on the street on a sign or online or whatever, that's a environment that's already out there. So they're taking advantage of the brand and saying, well, instead of trying to launch new things and trying to get people to come to us and maybe getting somebody to, you know, cover us on a TV show so that we can announce this or do something else, let's just take these existing brand experiences that are out in the wild and just tweak them a little bit. And it's really using your existing real estate, for lack of a better term, to do that. It's smart and affordable.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well, yeah, using the existing real estate is interesting. And it sort of seems that that's a common thread when you talk about things like throwback uniforms, but also, you know, it gets me back to our discussion on what you do, because in order to manage dynamic brands, we need better tools for doing so.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's almost impossible. And I think that's one of the reasons, because the technologies and the platforms are out there now, it enables that. I mean, you can't imagine, an auto brand being able to do something like that, like they do now, without platforms. It would just be impossible. And even if you had the stuff in the cloud, you still need to be able to really force the changes. And as you probably have experienced, as most people in any job they've ever had, even if people want to change things internally in a closed environment of a company, it's almost impossible to get everybody in line to say, hey, we're switching over to this now and it's going to be October 10th. So clear your desktops and clear your F drives and replace everything with this. It's not practical to assume that that's all going to be done. And then there's also a lot of things already out in the wild that can't be changed.
Well, it's an interesting time because we have all of these platforms that we build brand on, but we need better brand management tools, really, to be able to optimize presence across those platforms.
Yeah, I think most of the tools that are out there, if you were to just look at them all, as they should be, are really tools for creative development, creating creative, whether it's Photoshop or any other tool out there to produce audio, video, text, images, or any mixed media out there. The vast majority of brand-related tools that are out there are for creation. And we're trying to create some balance around that where you have delivery and retention and data and analytics tools to connect those two. So like our platform at Brandfolder seamlessly connects to, you know, hundreds of different environments where content is created so that it flows directly into there so that then you can take the next step. You know, there are whether it's you know, whether it's a podcast or a logo or a PowerPoint or a 200 or a 250 by 300 piece of ad creative, there's a lot of that out there. And it's a matter, once it's done and everybody says, wow, I really like that identity. I really like the way that looks. It resonates with me. It's on brand. It's all of these different adjectives and adverbs that matter. It's a game of distribution and making it so that that's engaging.
So talk a little bit about the analytics side of it beyond the management side, because I think that that's fascinating too, because I think it's hard to get your arms around what brand is, and we need better management tools for that, especially right now. But I think that squishiness also comes from not being able to understand or demonstrate accurately what brand does. So what are some of the analytics behind what you do?
So we focus on three layers of, you know, data is kind of a too broad of a term probably, and it's annoying for people to hear at this point, but I'll say insights and measurement, because that's really kind of what we're talking about. We work with our customers on three layers of measurement and insights. One is on the ingestion side. So as you're creating the new cover for your book, and let's say that's a creative asset that was created by, I'm sure, some designers at some high-end agency, or maybe you're super creative and you did it on your desktop, but it doesn't look like you did, unless you're really good at that, and I didn't know that. But let's say that's now been created as a final asset. As you insert that into your brand folder, we want to tell you as much as we can about that. We want to be able to just give you as much context, which may be too much or too little, but context that you never really thought about. Are the blue and the yellow, are they really the right blue and the yellow? Or are they maybe even a color off? Are they, how unique are those colors in the book industry, in the book cover industry in general? Super unique? Not very unique. How is the resolution and the pixelation of the colors, fonts, and logos and images on that book cover, are they right? Are they good enough? But so constantly giving context around how that relates to your brand and to the broader world as you insert these assets and call them final assets and decide that you're going to put them in play wherever you're going to put them in the future. So that's one layer. The second layer is really very operational, which is when the things are in the brand folder. So say you're a customer of ours that has, you know, a big brand like Salesforce or somebody like that, and you have all these assets and they sit in this brand folder, knowing exactly who has what, who's used what, where have they used it, when did they use it, what part of the world are they using it in, what are they connecting it to, and really finding out kind of, you know, library metrics. If you think about things that matter at companies, you usually know a lot about them, right? You put all of your customers into a CRM, you know exactly who's talked to them when, what their address is, what their titles are, what the relationship looks like, where you are in the sales cycle with them. That matters. If you ask most brand managers or CMOs, who has their brand, where has it been? Is it like you said, replacing the old? Has the old stuff been replaced? Has the new stuff been inserted in the right environments? Having all of those, that data and information to tell you about how it's being consumed and distributed and in what environments, that matters a lot. And then the third, which is obviously sort of master of the obvious, is how on the distribution side, coming out of the brand folder and into the wild, how are these things performing? Which assets perform better than others? Which assets are being, you know, reconfigured and resized? Which assets are doing well in Asia? Which assets do well in email marketing versus print? That kind of stuff. So those are the three layers of measurement and insights that we're looking at.
So would it be fair to say that it provides almost CRM level insights, but instead of the contact management, that we know about. Like you said, it's that same level of insight for our brand assets, where they're going, who's accessing them.
Exactly. And then also just context around them. You know, how unique is it?
Mm-hmm.
What isn't in here that might be in here? Where will they work? You know, the same types of images will work on Instagram that don't work on other social channels. So yeah, I think the CRM analogy's right on.
That is fascinating. Well, Luke, I would love to keep chatting about this. However, we are almost at our time. But before you go, I always like to ask our guests for a brand that has made you smile recently.
Well, I would say the brand that makes me smile recently and seems to have a pretty stable and persistent ability to do so is Patagonia. I think it's a I think it really checks a lot of boxes for me. I think it's I'm an outdoors person, so I think that puts it into a category that matters to me. I think it represents. Visually, I think it's a lovely brand. It's very clean and simple. It does have unique, as we talked about, dynamic instances that surface every once in a while and engage and delight people. I think on the sentiment and emotional side, I like what the brand represents, both practically and sort of emotionally. So I would say Patagonia.
That is,
and it's very versatile. I mean, they sell clothes and they sell food and they raise animals and it's a good brand. I think that's been thoughtfully crafted can really do a lot of different things, and I think that over time they've proven that undoubtedly.
Well, like you said, it is a good example of a dynamic brand. So I think that kind of brings us full circle. Luke, where can folks go to learn more about who you are and what you do?
I'm accessible. Anybody can email me at luke.beatty@brandfolder.com if anybody wants to reach out for me directly. You can learn about Brandfolder at brandfolder.com. And if folks from this podcast want to try a brand folder and see what that's like, they can certainly get all that information there. And then, you can follow me on Twitter, although I talk a lot about fishing and riding bikes and all that as much as I talk about brand. But those are good ways to get a hold of me. And I try to be super responsive to people. So,
well, see, your personal brand is dynamic because it can be about both brand folder and fishing and bikes also.
That's right. See, I just don't have an identity yet. I got to get the actual identity down. So I'll get some visual stuff to connect to that.
Awesome. Well, Luke, thank you for joining us on Brand.
I appreciate you having me. It's a great podcast, and I love your book.
Oh, thank you. And before we go, I always like to flip the microphone around to our community. Recently, Julia Carcamo gave us a shout on Twitter for, of all things, the book Brand Now that we were just chatting about. And a reminder, if you heard something that you liked on this episode or another, or if you have a question you'd like one of our guests to answer, let me know using the hashtag OnBrandPodcast, and you may just hear your thoughts right here on the show. On Brand is a production of Brand Driven Digital, helping complex organizations simplify their branding and marketing to unlock growth. More, including the links we discussed, at branddrivendigital.com. You can subscribe to the show via iTunes, Stitcher, and TuneIn. Speaking of iTunes, if you like what you're hearing, head over there, give us a quick rating and review, help others find the show. Until next week, I'm Nick Westergaard, and I'll see you on the internet.
This has been the On Brand Podcast, presented by Brand Driven Digital. For show notes, links, and more, go to onbrandpodcast.com. Remember, you can subscribe to the show and leave a rating and review at iTunes and Stitcher. Thanks for listening.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.